You're listening to the Modern Web Podcast. For more podcasts, videos, and events, find us online at modern-web.org or follow us on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web.
Jerome Hardaway and Rob Ocell discuss the differences between small language models and large language models, and the evolving role of software engineers in the age of AI engineering.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Modern Web Podcast, our special series on artificial intelligence and what you need to know as an engineer. Today, we're going to be talking about small language models and large language models, the whole grouping. We are with Jerome Hardaway as usual, but my name is Rob Ocell. I'm an architect at This.Labs, filling in for Tracy today. Jerome, you want to introduce yourself as well for people that are just joining us for the first time?
Yes, my name is Jerome Hardaway. I am the exec director of Etsu Code. I'm also an engineer at Microsoft and I CTO for a company called startup called MyRook AI.
Awesome. Well, yeah, get us started. Like many of us are still getting up to speed on just what large language models are. Like, what is this small language model? Who wants to go back to the small when they have the largest?
Well, you want to go, I mean, it's like using the best tool for a job, right? Like you, I mean, we all have seen, you know, bloated architecture, right? Now think about it when it comes in regards to software engineering. Do you really want, I mean, when you want that bloated, you're like, oh, wow, all these NPM packages here. Do we actually need all this stuff? Well, you know, this is impacting our performance. So think of it when it comes to like the same concepts with, language models, right? A small language model that is designed to do one thing well, or with the scope of one thing well, or a few things, is going to perform much better with your data than a large language model that's designed to do everything, right? Like, let's think about having SLMs, like essentially, let's talk about the first SLM that we had access to, the Codex, OpenAI Codex. When you think of it, it may have been an LLM, but in reality, when you look at the scope of an LLM, it wasn't. It was technically essentially a SLM because its job was just to be good with code. It didn't have to know anything about Aristotle. Didn't have to know, I mean, that's not a part of the requirements for the codex. Like, oh, I want you to be accurate when you're talking about Homer's Iliad or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about large language models, we kind of expect that. So let's think about if we're approaching small language models and in the term of accounting, I don't need my LLM to understand everything with English. I do need it to understand all the parameters on my Excel spreadsheet, right? So that cuts down the time that I'm using having to fine tune my model, right? Because my model is now already, because it's small, it's already like kind of fine-tuned because it doesn't encompass everything I don't need. Versus, you know, here's my LLM, now I have to fine-tune it, now I have to train it to just my data, just my needs, things like that, right? Like I like to go back to copy AI. Copy AI using, you know, Gemini or OpenAI or Azure OpenAI or Mistral, whatever it's using, it's a very big language model. All I really want you to handle is marketing, right? Well, you shouldn't need to know anything about Excel unless it's in the terms of marketing, but I don't want you to know how to do, you know, this thing in Excel because I don't need you to do that. I need you to do the other stuff. So that's the concept of it, right? That's the ideology behind it.
You know, do you know what makes it the difference, the concrete difference between SLM and small language models and large language models? Is it just the focus of it? Is it just the extent behind it, or is there a certain processing level or
the extent of the data? Right. Like, so when you're thinking about a large language model, I mean, it says it's large, it's huge, right? Like I said, it's the difference between knowing what an SLM. It's the difference between knowing like, oh, you have all the information of all of human knowledge in here. And now let's say I'm doing LLMs of ChatGPT 3.5 Turbo. You are able to regurgitate whatever I ask you, right? Versus ChatGPT 4.5 4.0 turbo or whatever it is now.
Yeah.
It just came out with something like 2 days ago about turbo being generally available. Now you're able to mimic at a faster clip of, you know, not only when I ask you the question, you're able to mimic the process of using those tokens and thinking a little more critically about what I asked, help create, you know, original works based upon the original content I've just poured into you. Whereas if I'm using Phi 2, I can't expect that type of performance, whether I'm using the algorithmic findings of like ChatGPT-4 or like a more performant technology, right? Because I instinctually like literally focus on, you know, wearing that down, focusing it on something smaller. So that is the entire, like, that's the entire concept that you have to think about. It's about size of data. It's going to make it faster, less expensive when you're thinking about SLMs, but there will be some performance caveats if you're like context switching, right? Like, I'm going, you know, you're on chat openai.com, yes, and you're in there, you know, asking random questions to the GPT, there you're not going to get the same performance as you were just going to an SLM that had chat that was trained just on, like, you know, types of water, or I guess that's too small. Let's think about it. Education, right? That, like, just in the scope of education, right? Because we're using that. I mean, now, mind you, these things are big, but they're not big compared to, you know, the LLMs that we are now accustomed to.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that we have to keep in mind. Like, yes, it's still a lot of information, but you can't expect the same information and level as opposed to, like, you know, this LLM has all of marketing in it from the beginning of time, like since the Gutenberg press, all of marketing's in here versus, you know, all of marketing, all of sociology, all of, you know, history, all of coding. Well, it probably could fit all of coding in any SLM. On top of that, code is pretty young when you think of it. As even the when you go to the very beginning of the creation computer and stuff, it's, you know, a little under 200 years, well, a little over 100 years old. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when you think about World War I and things of that nature. So going from there, like, that is like how we have to think of SLMs. So SLMs, they're going to help us for our tokenization a lot more, but they're also going to help us hurt us when it comes to, like, wanting, you know, more expansive things. But you'll see more companies going towards the SLM market, I believe, like, because they're like, we don't really need all of this data, and that will help us with our performance in the long run.
Well, I'll tell you another reason that those companies are going to gravitate them. Same thing that they did in the Node and JavaScript and NPM age. It's because a fair amount of these SLMs are open source.
Yes, so that's going
to
be
just
another...
on cost alone, I think a lot of people are going to put up with slightly more hallucinations or slightly worse output if they can get in the ballpark for effectively free or near free with some of these models.
Yes, and a lot more training of the models, right? That's what we're going to... SLMs are also going to be more manageable to train. You said it yourself. All right, we have the hallucinations and performance, which puts more of the training on us versus having to go to a big company. So it's going to be more manageable in the fine tuning based upon what you want, right? Because now we have open source models, and, you know, we have this, you know, chip war going on right now. So you have, you know, Apple making, they're going to be adding the AI chip to the MacBook Pro.
That's right.
You have NVIDIA is, you know, king right now, but Google's making its own chips. Meta's now making its own chips. I didn't even know.
That's wild.
Meta's making its own chips.
From social media to hardware producers. Yeah, just AI is this disruptive.
But you think of, like, Oculus, right? When you think about it, it makes sense. But they have the ability to do hardware, but you just don't think of them as a hardware company. But you have this $1 trillion, like, chip war about to go on, because, you know, right now everybody is dependent on one company's chips, and people are like, well, we don't want that. So, you know, the market's, you know, rectifying that, and you're seeing that in the, you know, in the ideology of, like, tech and AI and things of that nature. So I think it just, when it comes to especially when it comes to SLMs and, you know, using just a chip on your, the AI chip just on your MacBook Pro, that's going to be, you know, a cool thing, right? It's coming up. Now you'll have hobbyists like using SLMs to make really cool things with models. So,
yeah, I mean, the ability to run it locally is just such a game changer for a lot of things where it can be useful. So yeah. I guess the flip side to this then, which is almost seems funny to ask, but if there is an SLM that's trained for the use case that you have, what is a reason to need an LLM then? Like, are there things that even if there was an applicable small language model that you might still need a large language model? Or, you know, like, is this a situation where you prototype in the large language model and then you transition to a more focused small language model? Or, like, you know,
be in reverse as well, prototyping small and then using what you learn in prototype and then applying it to your large language model, right? Oh, like, okay. You have to think of, like, I think of large language models as a cool tool for something to use at the scale of Google. Right, I just came from Google Next, and they're using Gemini or Vertex, whatever they're calling it, all over the place. Right, when you're trying to use that, and you're trying to extend all of your, use one LLM to fine tune and build multiple APIs based off the model to fine tune it based upon each application you have. Right, because that's what they're doing, and extending the applications, right? Because not another virtual assistant is actually, you know, people are getting fatigued from chatbots, right? People want, you know, they want to feel something that's real or something that actually is productive. So, you know, they want, you know, recommended models in their Excel sheets, or they want recommended how to handle, you know, this response in a manner that, you know, doesn't have me popping off, but I'm kind of popping off, right? I'm kind of going off on somebody email, but I'm not going off on your email. Things like that, right? So that's the ideology that, you know, we're gonna start seeing, right? We're gonna see, you know, small startups when they're doing their demos and stuff, they're gonna start with SLMs versus the big, you know, OpenAI and Azure OpenAI, right? Because let's face it, they're probably gonna use it for their first product, which is a core tooling, right? You know, like for instance, MyRuck, we are doing, you know, B2B business with HR companies, right? So having Azure OpenAI or OpenAI or Gemini, having the large language models doesn't really make a lot of sense, as opposed, like, since we're only dealing with HR and dealing with the VA, let's focus on the SLM and, you know, work that to, you know, make better decisions on spin as well as, you know, fundraising. I mean, I guess fundraising is the term that you use for startups. What is it? Like, what do the startup people say? I've been in the nonprofit world too long. Raising capital. There you go. That's what they said.
Oh, yeah,
So that's the concept that, you know, you're going to start seeing. You know, it's going to be SLM for iteration or a one-off of products. And then you're going to start seeing, you know, as we get larger and more enterprise, when it makes sense, like when we are the Googles or the Stripes or the PayPals of the world, we're going to start, you know, doing more stuff. And also, just saying that SLMs might work when it comes to finance companies, right? Like if you only need to make a secure version of an AI API and you only need information to extend the tools you're using in finance, and you don't want, you want to minimize the risk of other data, or data leaks and other data coming from one part of your app to the other, that might be a good solution, a good use case. Let's use this SLM model and not, you know, risk having all this stuff touch each other.
You know, I feel like I was surprised how many small language models there were, even small language models that I thought were large language models, but it just depends on who you ask and how they classify it. But how should people evaluate these? You know, again, it's like one of these situations that, again, back when NPM was starting and people were asking, like, well, how do I know which packages to install? And there was these like heuristics for you know, the age of the thing, or maybe how many stars it got, or, you know, were there any big companies that were funding them, or, you know, these different things that people looked as proxies of quality in the absence of being able to evaluate it. Like, what it,
vanity are there metrics, any things that... Right. I do, I do like the vanity metric of the stability of an of a model, seeing who's working on it, how long, how stable it's been, how many people have been working on it, how is it getting funded. Though, like, I do feel like that is important. I don't feel like stars or anything like that is a good metric. That's a vanity metric You know, it's, for me, like, I treat AI like I treat I would treat LLM models and SLM models the way I would have treated, I treated AI versus crypto. I looked at who was talking, and when it was the people on Twitter talking about it, I stayed away from it. I stayed away from crypto. Like, I was like, I don't have anything in common with these dudes. These dudes are crazy. Stay away from crypto. But when the company started talking about AI and building it and stuff, I was like, I'm going to learn AI. When I started hearing about data from the companies and not from people, started focusing more on engineering with data, right? So that is the same, you know, concept. But, you know, we're still SLMs or LLMs, you know, it's still a crapshoot. We're still very young. And I think everybody wants a definite answer versus, you know, you got to get in the weeds and you have to learn it with it on your own. Like, we just now, even though I called it, I called it that Devin AI was fake. That was a fake, that was a fake demo, and like, now is, you know, that is there, but that's what we have to, you know, that's what we have to do. We have to go in there, do the work, and like, you know, so we're not on the other end trying to figure out what to do, what's debunked and what should be debunked and what isn't, right? Like, if you go by stars, I felt like, I hate this part of it, but stars and likes and follows are now the world's currency, and we are getting duped more than ever because
very easily gameable metrics. Yeah.
Yeah. These vanity metrics versus actual metrics in coming to things. Like, how did I learn how to do, how do I do solve for X in this process? Like, that's not what people look for anymore. But so, I think build with it. Find an SLM, start messing with that model, see how you can ingest that model, see how you can extend something. Don't build a chatbot, extend. Look at SLMs, like, try to extend something you are working with, and, you know, building something with that model and having it, you know, complement, right? I think the best thing about being at Google Cloud Next, which was, they should have just called it Google AI Next. I don't know what is happening over there.
Like, it's going to be a wild year for all these conferences, isn't it?
Yeah. I heard the word cloud like 3 times in the entire thing. Everything was AI. Everything was like how the cloud is pushing AI to you and how you can use Gemini. I heard so much about Gemini. I was like, are we sure? Am I at the right conference? Is this like about Google Cloud at all? No. Google Cloud is all AI. But I saw a lot of cool things about how people were using LLMs and using a Gemini LLM to extend their apps. That's why I'm like, you know, I'm very happy because it's at least on enterprise side for the most part. The virtual assistant, the chat modification of the applications are out, right? Everybody's thinking like, all right, how can we use this to track bugs when the into our app when people aren't looking? How do we use this to help our IAC improve that? Like, I'm very excited at that concept. So when we're thinking of like an SLM that only focuses on coding, how do we make those decisions to like, all right, here's the SLM. It's priority that we want is similar to Codex. We want to make it focusing on the parts that we are weak on. If I'm talking from the perspective of a JavaScript engineer, it's going to be testing and IAC, because those are two things that JavaScript engineers hate doing. Like, you know, I made that joke at the talk that I did with Tracy, and literally no one laughed because I guess I was telling the truth and none of them had tests on their website. And I was like, oh no, that's a accidental bomb. But yeah, so like that's something right there. Something right there that can help you get the thing that you hate out of the way, or make, you know, what you do pleasurable. Or like, you know, how do we use how do we identify things in a certain manner for our users who have dyslexia or something like that, right? Or, you know, how do we argue what may be an accessible tool or an unaccessible tool? Like, artificial intelligence helped me learn about how gaming theory helps people with ADHD, which is why people with ADHD can focus on video games for a very long time because of the constant instant feedback loop. And how, you know, to correlate that with software engineering, how the power mode extension on Visual Studio Code is actually, if when you look at it from that point of view, an accessibility tool, because it gives you an instant feedback loop the entire time that you're writing code. So I was like, holy crap. So how do we implement these solutions, right? How do I teach, you know, how do we create tools that look at, you know, what are the types of words that people with dyslexia tend to trip over the most? And how do I highlight that? Or, you know, how do I go through the process of, you know what, now I have extended this SLM to the microphone, as I'm hearing you talk, I'm able to write the transcription and I'm able to highlight the words you have trouble with as you're reading. So like, yo, you have trouble with these words, let's go ahead and sound them out, et cetera, et cetera. We have to start like going in there, building with this stuff, you know, playing and focusing on extending what we already trying to do.
Before we get back to our conversation, we wanted to say thank you to This.Labs, who is the sponsor of today's show. If you need help with a project that has failed to deliver on time, or are in need of a team that feels true ownership over your engineering projects, definitely hit up This.Labs. They specialize in helping business leaders ensure their strategic digital initiatives stay on track. Trusted by companies like PlayStation, Capital One, Herman Miller, PayPal, and T-Mobile, you can find them at this.co. That's THISDOT.co. Now, let's return to our show.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You know, it repeats what we've said so many times in this series, that I think a lot of times AI challenges our imagination, because it, you know, with anything that sort of changes your paradigm, you can only think in the previous mode. And so the uses and the ways that you want to use these tools exist in a world that doesn't have those tools. And it just takes a lot of that iteration and then sharing with other people what they have to see, and to suddenly start going like, oh, like that's what's interesting, is when you sit down and sometimes you think about it, all you can think of is chatbots to create. But then when someone tells you what they've built with AI, you're like, that's the most obvious and correct answer ever. Of course, that's what you should use it for. And I think that's what's exciting about this time, but it can also be frustrating when you're sitting there and you just can't get your brain to click over into the new way.
Well, I think that's the most important part of, you know, engineers. Like, you know, now we have to think, there's more need for human in the loop protocols than ever, because now we have to think further and think deeper. And that's, I think, one of the biggest arguments why I keep telling engineers you're going to be okay, because now you already know how to think in concept of English, and you know how to think of concept in computer. Now you're putting those together, you're able to extend. Like, I'm yelling at my ChatGPT for Business all the time. Like, look, don't ever give me another chatbot idea again, right? Because that's the only thing it comes up with. Like, no, we don't want that. We want to extend things. We want to make things better. How do I solve for X as X and do this so that you get out of the way, right? That's what I want. I want you to get out of the way. I don't want, you know, AI. And that's our real goal. Like, AI should be, we should be focusing on the sophistication of artificial intelligence and SLMs, LLMs, with the concept of how UX designers and designers in general look at front end, right? They want the design to get out of the way. It should be a add-on that you don't even notice, right? Until it comes, you know, until, you know, you go deep and weeds of user case study, right? That's how we should start as engineers, start thinking, right? We should start thinking, how do I uses to enhance the experience for the user while getting it out the way. Now, you know, you got 3-4 stops and new moves and gestures that the user has to do. Yeah, like, okay, why, like, your AI isn't getting out the way. Like, if you have a little faint thing as you're typing based upon what you're seeing, hey, I would like to add this recommendation or finish this, and, you know, or hey, can you say this better? Or, like I said, Grammarly, yeah. Grammarly's W for this. Like, they love, it loves, you know, asking the right question. So I think whether you're dealing with LLM or an SLM, the most important thing that engineers can be doing is trying to figure out how to get it out of the way while extending the tools and protocols that we, you know, we're already using. Like, that's, you know, in the end, that's all we have to, that's what we're supposed to be doing.
To some extent, I hate that the dialogue around the whole Devin situation became so toxic so quickly, because it became centered on whether or not AI could replace engineers entirely. But I mean, you get a chance to see a demo of it. And what fascinated me about it was, who knows if it will have all the capabilities that some of people will claim it will have. But what struck me watching a demo of it was that it didn't, my first impression of it was not that it was replacing anybody, but that it was promoting every engineer to being a product manager or a team leader. That this idea of suddenly being like, wow, you as a person are no longer an engineer on a team, but you are now a team lead of potentially several autonomous agents that you can coordinate to do parts of a larger whole. And wow, what an up-leveling. You went from being an individual contributor potentially to being a team leader or a manager or a product, you know, a product leader, but, which is like,
I mean, there's
quite fascinating.
There's a devil's advocate in that, right? And I hate to say that because, you know, a lot of people have their identity like tied up with being an engineer, right? For them, this was, I can speak for me personally, this was my, you know, this is my superpower that got me out of bad situation of like, I don't know what to do with my life. I just got out of the military and, you know, everybody's saying that there's no skills for, like, there's no jobs for you out here in this market. So when you think about that, you're like, how do I, you know, what am I now? Do I want to be a team lead? Do I want to be a manager of AI agents or co-pilots or whatever you're saying? And with Devin, I feel like, I think if the market was different on the hiring side if the market was different on the hiring and AI side, if we already hadn't had like a situation that's definitely gonna blow up in their face, sort of like with Klarna, where they didn't put any human in the loop protocols in and they just essentially replaced their entire customer service team with AI agents, like that, you know, we wouldn't be having these conversations, right? If people weren't in, like, in real time seeing applications and seeing companies trying to, you know, fire people and try to augment that person's skill set with AI, I mean, we're gonna see that. There was a situation Friday where somebody close to me was, thankfully they were double dipping, but they were fired from their second job because the startup thought that they were, they could use AI for it, or somebody that was on the VP side thought that, and then turn around, they couldn't use AI for everything. So after firing this person, they're texting this person for asking them to give something. I'm like, no, don't answer that. Like, fuck that. Like, I'm like, oops,
yeah.
Forget that. don't answer that. But like, that's the world we're living in. So that's where a lot of this human interaction, this human stress is coming from, is I don't want to feel like that. I don't want to, like, so we had to, that's, I think Devin would have been taken differently if we were all like still, you know, if you could still like barely do a coding project and get $100,000 job, like it was like the first year and a half after pandemic, but now that things have been a little more shaky, you know, a lot of that negativity
why I was saying, like, over. I think I wish we could talk about what it could portend other than as it's been sold. Like, it got sold in such a goofy way that, like, it demands that we respond to it and take it seriously. If you're going to say you know you're going to hype this thing up as it's going to replace everybody, then it tells us we have to take it seriously and respond as such.
It was weird to me from the gate, because I was like, first and foremost, who the hell is doing competitive coding? Get a real hobby. Like, what's going on?
Right,
like,
what struck me as interesting is that there's this idea that, for example, one of the things that I thought like would be really cool for the future here, and I think it's just AI tools in general, right, is this idea that, well, what's one thing that a lot of engineers do that kind of takes up time and makes software expensive? And it's like running POCs. So the idea that I could say, hey, can you POC what it would be like if I use this library to do something really quick? And it gives you something, like, it doesn't take away, it does those things like that. Like, or for, you know, like people often say, oh, AI, you know, in the future is not going to be newspaper writers, right? Where writers aren't going to be replaced by AI, even if they manage the AIs and monitor what they do. But, you know, imagine you're a newspaper writer and you're like, hey, AI agents, I'm talking about this person in my story. Can you go run background for me and get a bunch of the supplementary information I need to put into this article? And it runs off and is putting together, you know, paragraphs or whatever for you on background on somebody that you can then pull in. To me, like, that's that exciting thing. It's what you're talking about, like extending
verify
our capabilities.
And pull in. Verify.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely.
Human
you're, no, you're
in the
absolutely
loop
correct.
Actually, yeah. So that's how you get in trouble for plagiarism.
I wish that's weird. Where they would have sold Devin, though. Like, that to me, because, like, to me, that's where the promise of it is. But I absolutely understand where people's reaction came from. Like, it's not an unreasonable reaction at all.
Yeah, because we are engineers aren't stupid. So we know that we're the most expensive and hardest to control line item at most companies, right? We're the hardest to hire because you can get a person with a degree from UC Berkeley and they can code worse than a person from, you know, code bootcamp XYZ, or you can get a code person from code bootcamp XYZ and they have everything right and they can't code out of a paper bag or something like that. Like, we are the hardest to test for. We're the hardest to really replace, like, and, you know, and a harsh reality is most of their we take up a substantial amount of budget for the amount of control they have. So, and Devin, I think the creators of Devin knew this, that's what they were like going for. They were going for the marketing buzz of sorts, right? Because they know the skill is a dream for us, but it's a nightmare for everybody that's not a coder and wants to make money, right? Yeah. I don't know about you, I learned how to code. One of the reasons that motivated me when I code is I had all these ideas that I couldn't, you know, do because they were so expensive. Right, like that's like I was like, yeah, coders were the biggest thing. Coding was the big blocker in a lot of my ideas. So how do I solve for X when I'm not, you know, when I can't code? So that motivated me to get into front end engineering, because I was like, I want a website. I thought you bought an LLC and you could just, you know, put a website up, and that was not the case. So that, I think that's where the whole Devin conversation comes into, right? How it impacts people. But we could talk about this all day. I'm more excited about how to use SLMs, how to use SLMs in like APIs, which we'll be talking about, I guess, next week or the week after.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe this fits into that topic, but what's an SLM that you're using now? I guess just to give people an example.
Phi2 is the SLM I do the most research in conversation. Like, I mean, I spend most of my time.
And what is it focused on?
I am focusing it on SLM, I think, created by, I want to say it was created by Microsoft. I feel like I am messing this up, though. Let me share the link in chat. Yep, there we go. And there's a whole article about the surprising power of small language models. Boom, share. And I'm focusing this on, like, you know, this model, actually a little bit bigger than, it's kind of big now compared to Phi 1.
yeah,
but
yeah.
we're just focusing now for exploration, and I'm focusing on like just to explore with my apps, right? Small enough that I can, you know, fine tune things with my, with any app ideas I have. So like that is, that's what I'm mainly going for.
A lot of these, I don't know if this one is, but a lot of these SLMs are open source. So when, if you're doing these types of things, what are you doing to host or deploy them into production? Is it just standard AWS or Azure or Google Cloud kind of type situations? Is there something specialized you're doing? Is, you know,
I'm using this in Azure. I know that as Google gets more SLMs, you'll be able to do it directly with Vercel. So that's going to be super cool. Vercel and Google is like, you know, match made in heaven right now. They love each other, and rightfully so, because people who have startups love Next.js and Vercel, and Google loves startups. So that, you know, it works from the client side. But I would look into the Google Cloud, because like I said, they are talking everything AI. So look at what the SLMs that Google Cloud has, or see what Vercel is offering in regards to that. And, or, you know, you can use the models in the Azure AI Studio when you're building things. But those are the big three that I'm seeing people doing. I have a call sometime this week with another AI nerd to see what they're using, doing a lot of open source stuff. So hopefully by our next call, I'll be able to be like, yeah, I know how people are rolling their own, you know, now.
Yeah, like, you know, psychopaths. It's like, I'm sure we're just days away from people announcing their platform as a service offerings, where they will easily host these SLMs for you to do your own.
You just came up with a business idea right now.
Sorry, edit this out. Everybody that's listening, patent pending on that idea. No. All right. Well, I guess that's going to bring us pretty close to the end for today. Any last thoughts or challenges you want to leave people with, especially when it comes to SLMs?
I challenge you to research SLM and then try to come up with three ideas of something that you love that you can use it to extend. It doesn't have to be big. It could be, you know what, you like basketball, March Madness just happened. How can you extend the predictability of your next March Madness? You know,
can't do worse than I did myself. So
I heard, like, didn't the Bumble CEO or the, like, didn't she win like the executive one?
I heard
that the big executive one was done, and one of the ladies won it and like blew all the dudes out of the window. And I was like, huh, of course, because she probably wasn't like, she probably did her research. Most guys just start picking stuff. Like, I know that's what I did for March Madness. I had no idea who anything was. But yeah, look at how to extend, using a model, how to extend. And a small model is a great way to get to that point of view of, let's extend this. Like, I want to extend what I'm doing and, you know, make a better experience for my users, right? So that's what I would recommend you do.
Awesome. Well, that's going to be it for today and our episode on artificial intelligence, particularly around large language models and small language models. You know, as we like to say, the conversation doesn't stop here. You can find me online on Twitter or X at RoboCell. As for Jerome, where can they find you online, Jerome?
I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, GitHub, all the above is Jerome Hardaway. I'm very inventive.
It's so smart. I wish we could all go back in time and tell ourselves that screen names were not it. We'll all regret not using our name.
It's all SEO, man. I was like, you gotta do what's best for the SEO.
Exactly. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode, and we hope to see you next time. All right, bye-bye.
This podcast is sponsored by This.Labs, a framework agnostic consultancy that specializes in JavaScript. You can find them at this.co/labs. That's THISDOT.co/labs. For all of your friends and you, do, yeah, query, yeah, query.
shouted, yeah! Queries do, so come on, let's go, cause we got a show for